My pleasure to moderate this this panel. This is about asset distribution during and after divorce. This is something that we as family international family lawyers has to deal every single day with it. So I'm sure that everybody will be very interested about what you can explain to us about these very different jurisdictions that we have in this panel. I hope and
Comandante,
I know that
but it's you, Miguel.
there is someone with the open microphone. There is complicated. I ask you to explain to us your legal system and what about assets distribution in a very short time. I know. Okay, an Uruguayan or Argentinian was there speaking. I heard the accent. Okay, so I would love to know those big difference in between common law system and civil code or legal systems that we have and will be able to see it from this panel. Do your country has different patrimonial regimes? Are prenups allowed, binding or not? Who has jurisdiction and how is the proceedings to divide assets? So let's start with this discussion. First of all, I would like to introduce Marguerite Goodstock-Riley from Barbados. She's an International Academy Family Lawyers Fellow. So Marguerite, please.
Hi, good morning, and thank you. Happy to be here. So, speaking about property distribution in Barbados, the Barbados Family Law Act was a significant departure from our previous provisions. It follows the Australian family law, the provisions there, and so it's obviously a departure from the English jurisprudence, which we previously followed. And it's really been described as an ambitious and comprehensive family law statute. The fundamental changes were that we moved to no-fault divorce, where the divorce was on the grounds only of irretrievable breakdown shown by 1 year separation. Also, the recognition of unions other than marriage, once you've been in a union for 5 years, and the property claims that can then be made by persons in those relationships. And also a fundamental change, which was the recognition that you could have a property interest based on your direct or indirect financial contribution, but also your contribution as a parent and a homemaker. There was obviously the initial concern at the ease, so you no longer had to prove cruelty, et cetera, adultery. And there was concern at what was considered the ease in which you could now get divorced, and that property issues would now arise for people who would consider that they were not at fault. Somebody could just end the marriage after a year, and then they are forced into the position of having to divide up assets that they may have acquired over a period of time. However, as the jurisprudence has developed, I think persons can see that the courts generally look at what is just and equitable. And it is not simply that you're married, you get half, or that you get nothing at all if it is not in your name. The provisions of the family, all property are considered, and whether in possession or reversion, and it's not confined then just to who has the legal interest or whose name is on the title. And the considerations that the matters that the court can take into consideration are extremely wide. For example, the age and state of health of the parties, the income, and property and financial resources, their capacity for appropriate gainful employment, the care and control of the child, the responsibility to support other persons, your eligibility for pension or allowance, the standard of living, that's a that in all the circumstances is reasonable, the extent to which the party has contributed to the resources of the other person. The duration of the marriage is important. Again, are you talking about a 30-year marriage or a 5-year marriage? And the interesting provision is the need to protect the position of a woman who wishes only to continue in her role as a wife and mother. So those are all factors. And what the court can do is alter your property interest. So the name, a property may be in a person's name, and it's not just the matrimonial home, but you have companies, etc. And the court can alter the interest of the parties, taking all those factors into account. But what is important is that the court should not make an order unless it is satisfied that in all the circumstances, it is just and equitable to make the order. So there is always a balance. And the contribution that the court looks at is your contribution to the acquisition, the conservation, and the improvement of the property. So what can happen is, and again, that's where the length of the marriage would be important, because the acquisition of the property may have only been the result of one party's work. But obviously, certainly in longer marriages, the other party may have contributed to the conservation or the improvement of that property, even if they did not make a contribution to the initial acquisition. And again, there's the issue of the contribution as a homemaker and a parent. And I think sometimes there have been problems for persons to understand and appreciate that. But certainly there is a concept that where one party is taking care of the home and the children, that frees up the other party and is a contribution to that other party's success financially. And we've just finished Mother's Day here, as they may have in some places, and everybody speaks about the wide range that mothers are involved in. They're taxi drivers, caretakers, they're doctors, they're everything. And therefore, this legislation really puts teeth to that sentiment that the work of a homemaker, we say mothers, but it's not confined, but that generally is the case. So this legislation puts teeth to that sentiment that a wife and a homemaker's contribution has value. The court does have power to set aside property orders, as happens in many cases. People seek to hide their assets, transferring it to their mother or their brother or some family member. The court can look into that, and they have wide powers to make lump sum settlements, weekly, monthly, or periodic payments, impose conditions, ask for security, etc. We won't go into all of that in the time frame that we have. Another important aspect is that there's a duty to end financial relations. So the idea is not to have matters going on for years and years, and that whatever an order is sort of brings to an end to that relationship. One recent amendment which has been very important is that a divorce cannot be final until if there's an outstanding property application. And that was a problem before, in that persons, again, we'll say men again, could get the divorce and move on with their life, but the property issues were still outstanding and could then drag on for years. So if you want a divorce, though, you need to wrap everything up. And that has sort of taken care of that issue. Important matters in property division is the question of discovery. And what are we talking about? There is a requirement for parties to provide their financial statements, and you can have discovery and order production of documents from the other person. Additionally, there is the issue of the provision that third parties have to provide information. You can order third parties to provide information. And that is a very valuable provision, where you can then ask for information from the banks, etc. And especially after a person has said, well, I don't have any money, I don't have anything here. We can get orders for banks to provide documents, things people have put forward for their loans, which can show a significant difference from what they've been telling the court. Another important aspect is that the courts have recognized that they can make adverse assumptions against someone who will not cooperate. So again, it is not that we continue for years and years and years seeking discovery. If you are claiming, for example, you have a loan or money is owed, you produce the information. If you haven't produced it, the court can make an adverse assumption if there is something that you could have done that you have not done. And that has certainly assisted us where we don't then spend years seeking on a scavenger hunt, trying to find out information. The issue of indirect contribution and your contribution as a homemaker and parent is obviously very fact-based. And that can be a challenge because obviously people don't save receipts for, you know, clothes they've bought for the children 20 years ago, or have evidence that they did all the cooking, etc. But that obviously then is a question of evidence and for the court to make a determination there. So to sum up, you can see that it's not a case that once you're married, you get half, or it's not a case that if it's not in your name, you get nothing. And the decisions are based on the facts of the case. And the decisions have generally shown that the courts have gotten on board with this new definition of property division. There are still some issues where even marriages and long-term cohabiting relationships do not cover all the unions that exist and in which people have property. So persons not in a marriage or not in a long-term union may have issues and would not fall under the act. There is a requirement for cohabiting relations to bring an application within a certain time frame. Because they don't actually divorce, there can then be issues of when is the separation. So those are concerns. But overall, we would say that the provisions are very forward-thinking and very beneficial and fair to both parties. So that would be my contribution. I wait for any questions.
Thank you, Margaret. You were absolutely on time as you promised me. Thank you very much. And as I already can see that we'll have a big difference here in between two systems, all that you must arrange everything or have everything solved before divorce, as you explained, Margaret, and is the same in Chile. But we have other countries like Argentina where you can get divorced and you have to discuss after, no, everything related with us. So this is something interesting to know. Now, it's my absolutely pleasure to introduce a very, very good friend, Alberto Román from Mexico. He's a founding member of IJUDEFA, and I hope he will be finally an IFL fellow very soon. And so please, Alberto, welcome, and please explain us about how it works in Mexico.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. First of all, it's an absolute honor for me to be here, and thank you all for joining us today. I must say that when I first look at the resumes of the other panelists whom I have the pleasure of sharing this webinar, I found that some important omission on credentials of Daniela Horvitz, our amazing moderator. For 7 months, Daniela has held the position of president of the IJUDEFA. Thanks to her and her tireless work to bring together lawyers from different jurisdictions who are truly integrated and interested in international family law, it's that why I am here. So thank you, Daniela, very much. Mexican law provides that marriage must be entered into one of two recognized property regimes, either as the marital partnership for a separation of property. For this purpose, in theory, it is necessary to grant or constitute marital contracts, which are the covenants in which the spouses establish the agreement regarding their assets during their marriage and their management, which corresponds to both spouses. such marriage contracts must be signed or submitted before the marriage and may be amended before a judge specialized in family law or before a notary public. Here we face the first problem. Persons who enter into marriage under the regime of marital property, conjugal partnership or partnership in goods, celebrate by exception a prenup agreement that constitutes the basis or conforms a matrimonial covenant. On the other side, all those who have entered into a marriage under the separation property regime do not have a matrimonial agreement or covenant. In this case, under the law, it is assumed that each spouse owns their own property. Marriage contracts are totally free and autonomous, so that any arrangement or condition regarding the assets of the spouses may be agreed upon without restriction. And in the case of marriages entered into under the marital property regime, the assets will belong in equal parts to both spouses. Thus, when entering into a marriage under the marital property regime, it's clear what each spouse is entitled to, but with respect to those married under their separation of property regime, property provisions were exceptionally overcome by various amendments of the civil code. It recognized the right of the spouse who did not own property with respect of the other in cases of divorce of persons who married under separation of property regime. And in terms of divorce by persons married under the regime of marital partnership, the law expressly excludes assets acquired prior to the marriage by donation, inheritance, or by fortune, as well as the assets acquired by with the own resources of the sale of those assets prior to the marriage. That makes sense. The object's personal of the personal use and the instruments of the profession or business of the spouse for specific professions such as attorneys, dentists, carpenters, whatever. In terms of the separation of property regime, Mexican law recognizes the free and absolute ownership of the property that each spouse acquires during the marriage, without any limitation or restriction at all. The division of the two types of property regimes, it's so clear that the civil code recognizes that the owner can make the use of the property without any limitation, as well as the proceeds, revenue, benefits from each of them without the intervention of their partner. The only limitation to the free exercise of the right of ownership and possession of such assets is provided by the Article 212 of the Civil Code, which established that the assets must be used primarily to pay the alimony of the spouse and the children. In the event of default, a family law judge may intervene to sell, mortgage, or place a lien on such assets in order to cover alimony payment. As I stated at the beginning, we have reached in this moment, we reached the moment of transitioning from legal provisions to totally terror. What actually happens with the distribution of assets in Mexico is, according to Article 267 of the Civil Code, when facing a divorce under a separation of property regime, the spouse who has devoted mainly to the household duties and children during the marriage has the right to request from the other a compensation that can range from zero and up to 50% of the value of the property acquired during the marriage. That is to say, the property covenant entering into the spouse's open marriage under a separation of property regime ceases to be valid and becomes a matter of judicial examination pursuant to the evidence and facts that are submitted either to the benefit or detriment of one of these spouses. The Mexican Supreme Court ruled that the reason for alimony is duty, welfare, and compensation resulting from economic imbalance existing at the time of the dissolution of the marriage. The compensatory objective implies compensating the economic loss and opportunity suffered by the spouse who assume the domestic and family burdens without receiving remuneration in return. Said loss entails two aspects. The first one is the economic loss resulting from a spouse not having been able during the marriage to dedicate to a remunerated activity or not having been able to develop oneself in the traditional labor market with the same time, intensity, and diligence as the other spouse. And the second one, the damages derived from the opportunity cost, which translate into the obstacle to education or professional or technical training. The decrease or obstacle to join the labor market and the consequential loss of social security rights, among others. In other words, the aim is to compensate the losses suffered insofar as the performance of these activities sustained over time generate weakening of the links of this person with the labor market, loss employment options, few hours of paid work, work exclusively in the informal sector of the economy, for example, and the of academic labor preparation. Therefore, the facts that the family judge must examine to determine the amount and type of alimony are the cost of opportunity and economic losses, the accumulation of the assets and the economic and property rights resulting from the cost of opportunity and economic losses. The duration of the obligation must be proportional to repair the cost of those opportunity and economic losses. In order to arrive at this valuation, the judge must assess the cost of opportunity and economic losses. And to do so, it is essential to determine the time and degree of the diligence that the creditor spouse employed in these activities. Thus, the judge must analyze first the duration of the family relationship in which the creditor spouse assume most the household course and the children. The second, taking into consideration what part of the disadvantage the spouse's available time was used for the performance of the household chores. And third, the dedication to the home and to the care of the children or dependents can translate into the activities which are not mutually exclusive and that must be valued in an individual way. Note that the assets subject to compensation and are only those generated during the marriage, and that excludes the previous assets or those that were obtained with other assets prior or prior resources. No, the assets received by the debtor spouse, either by donation, inheritance, or gift, should not be taken into consideration. In order to determine the possible economic loss suffered by the spouse who, in benefit of the marriage, assumed certain domestic and family burdens without receiving financial remuneration in return, the Supreme Court of Mexico has established that the judge must take in consideration that the dedication of the home and to the care of dependents can be understood as multitasking and that they must be evaluated in an individual way. For example, these duties include material execution of household chores, which may consist of activities such as sweeping, ironing, preparing food, cleaning, etc. The material execution of tasks outside the home, but related to the organization of the house and the obtaining of goods and services for the family, which may consist of appointments with public offices, banks, companies supplying services, purchase of goods for the family, performing functions of direction and management of the household economy, which includes giving orders to the domestic employees regarding daily work, supervising them, making arrangements for certain repairs, maintenance of the home, whatever. And the care, upbringing and education of the children, as well as the other relatives living in the marital home, which include material and moral support of minors and occasionally of the elderly. In other words, the support of domestic employees in the marital home does not exclude by itself the applicability of the compensatory mechanism provided by the law, but will be adjusted only to the amount to be set. I think that's enough for now, because you know there's a lot of information of how the rule the courts should rule the compensatory mechanism. But I am over time. Thank you so much, Daniela, and thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you, Alberto. Indeed, it seems that as Margaret and you explained, all our jurisdictions are taking in consideration caring duties now when they have to decide about division of assets. This is something interesting. And after, I will ask you if we have enough time about prenup and if you respect in different jurisdictions prenups or marital regimes in other jurisdictions. So now, please. Allow me to introduce Meta McMillan from an amazing jurisdiction. I'm looking to have a case with you, Meta, to be able to have to be compelled to visit you in Bahamas. So please, Meta, explain us how it works in Bahamas.
Thank you. I'm very much looking forward to that opportunity, Daniela. It will be very important to have a face-to-face conference in the Bahamas. So I just really focused on asset distribution in the Bahamas after divorce, and it does happen after divorce. The only thing that happens before is maintenance for the wife and the children, or the dependent spouse if that's a husband. The law in the Bahamas is based on the English common law, insofar as the authorities are applying common law principles, those will be relied upon and persuasive to the courts in the Bahamas. And also, if they're interpreting legislation that we have, which is very similar or exactly the same, we will rely on those interpretations. And always, of course, looking to the status of the court in England that we're relying on, so Court of Appeal, and our highest court is the Privy Council, Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. So those would be binding on our Court of Appeal. So the principal law governing distribution of assets after divorce is the Matrimonial Causes Act. And insofar as those provisions are the same as the English Matrimonial Causes Act, then the application is going to be very, very similar. In the Bahamas, unfortunately, the rules that we have, which we are under the Matrimonial Causes Act, which are the rules that we use to carry out the practical implementation of the Act itself, are very, very old. I think they're 1952 or 53. So some of the relief that we have in the Act, we actually don't have rules dealing with the with that relief, but we managed to get through. I was interested to hear my learned friend Marguerite mention Barbados and the new legislation in Barbados. I know that we are looking at certainly revising our legislation and possibly following the approach in Barbados. But for the time being, it's the English Act, which is which our Act is very, very similar to. Apart from the mandate, there's a difference now. In 1984, the English Act was amended to remove what's called the tailpiece, which is the mandate of the court when making an order for financial provision. And that is, and was in England, but is still in the Bahamas, to put the parties, so far as is practicable, in the same position that they would have been if they hadn't got divorced and if they'd each fulfilled their respective financial obligations to the other, and also having regard to the conduct of the parties, if that conduct is extreme or exceptional. And we're talking about things as serious as attacking the other spouse so that they are left paraplegic for life. I mean, very, very extreme things, which then affect their financial needs and their ability to make money. So in England, they removed that mandate, which they used to have, and they didn't replace it with anything else. The focus in England now is interpreted as being to make an order that is fair. And they have basically said, well, fairness means equality, doesn't it? Fairness means that equality is a starting point unless there's some circumstances which would justify a departure from fairness. So what is happening in the Bahamas, because we rely on so many of the cases, is that that approach has been adopted to a certain extent. But what the Court of Appeal has reminded the lower courts in the Bahamas is that actually that is not the mandate and it of the Bahamian court. The mandate is to put the parties in the same position as close as possible, given that there are now two households, as they would have been if they were had remained married, and that that is going to affect the distribution of the property. It's not going to be 50-50 if you have a situation where the husband is sharing the assets or the parties are sharing the assets and the husband is paying for all the expenses of the children and the wife is expecting to continue to receive maintenance because she is not able to earn the same income as the husband is. And therefore, it's the approach that really the division of the assets is not going to end up as 50-50. It's going to be more like 30%. And the only time really when you see an equal division of assets is when there has been both parties contributing financially to the marital acquest, and when effectively the court is making a clean break. A clean break, which means there's going to be no more maintenance, there's no going to be any periodical payments to the wife. Parties are going to separate with their share of the property, with their share of the money, and move forward separately. So that's the distinction there. I also noted my learned friend talking about the fact that the wife's contribution, normally the wife and mother's contribution in kind, is taken into account in Barbados. It has been taken into account in England for a very long time, and it's supposed to be taken into account in the Bahamas also. But you do see cases where priority is given to the financial contribution. And the focus on the cases where you have a couple with three children, you'll read the judgment and there's actually no mention of the fact that the mother has been caring for the children, helping them with their homework, caring for the home, even though that is supposed to be really taken into account so that there is equality in the approach, so that discrimination does not come in through the back door, but it is still happening. And I noted from my learned friend's comment about, you know, the need of the spouse who takes care of the home and takes care of the family to actually have to start proving the extent to which she did that. And I also had a little taste of it from what Alberto was saying when he was talking about getting into details now about the extent to which the wife is managing the household staff. And it, when it's so easy for a husband who is paying the expenses to have the proof of it, how does a wife do that? So it seems to me somewhat is perpetuating the imbalance. And unfortunately, in the Bahamas, that imbalance and that perspective is still very strong. And it's going to take probably another half century till we catch up with other jurisdictions. So the circumstances that must be taken into account, and all circumstances are taken into account, is set out in the Act, and they're exactly the same as in the English Act, which is the income, earning capacity, property, and other financial resources, which the parties have and which they will have in the future, they foreseeably will have in the future. So, you know, that takes into account inheritance, a likely inheritance, and so forth. The financial needs and obligations and responsibilities which each of the parties to the marriage has. The standard of living enjoyed by the family before the breakdown of the marriage. The age of each party to the marriage and the duration of the marriage. So a 20-year marriage plus, you're going to see much more likelihood of of greater provision and more equality. There can be less picking apart what the parties did and did not do after a 20-year marriage than there may be at an 8-year or 10-year marriage. Any physical or mental disability of either party to the marriage. The contribution made by each of the parties to the welfare of the family, including any contribution made by looking after the home or caring for the family. And in the case of proceedings for divorce or nullity of marriage, the value of any benefit which, by reason of the divorce, the other party may lose, such as, for example, a pension. When considering those Section 29 factors and any other circumstances which are relevant, it's going to really depend on the judge in the Bahamas that you're before and how they perceive what is and the weight to they give to those various factors. So you may have one judge, for example, who will say, my perspective is that the children don't need to go to private school. I don't see why they should be going to private school. They can go to public school like any other children. That's a personal, so that personal view then carries through to the division of the assets and how they apply the property, because they're not taking into account the need for that expense. So it does affect the decision. The decisions can be very, very different depending on which judge you have, despite them taking into account all of those circumstances. So looking at the authorities in the Bahamas, I can say that I can summarize the following principles for you. That is that acquired before the marriage, is not going to be subject to sharing. Likewise, remains separate. So it's treated as separate property and is not assimilated into the marital property. So assets purchased with the income from that premarital property also remain separate. So, for example, if the husband or the wife had shares before the marriage and they were earning dividends and they never used that shareholding to support the family, or they never intended those shares to be brought into the marriage and used as an investment for the marriage, those will not be regarded as property subject for sharing, marital property. So any sharing must be of marital property. And unlike England, the Bahamas still has the old approach to how you define what marital property is, which is stated as those things which are acquired by one or other or both of the parties with the intention that there should be continuing provision for them and their children during their joint lives and used for the benefit of the family as a whole. In England, that was the approach in 1973 in England in Watchtell and Watchtell. That is the approach in the Bahamas still, despite the common law having moved on in England, so that now it is limited. When were those assets acquired? That's the focus, not the intention for which those assets were acquired. So we've even had a case, before I forget, I mean, just talking about, for example, a matrimonial home, what the property was owned by the husband before the marriage. The husband uses that as the matrimonial home. The family use it as the matrimonial home. The husband pays the mortgage through the marriage in respect to that matrimonial home. That is an asset which would normally be automatically treated as marital property, the matrimonial home, and divided equally, or, you know, an order made postponing sale until the children had grown up and so forth, and divided. We have had a case where the court has said, well, the husband paid the entire mortgage for that property, so the matrimonial home is going to go to the husband, and it's not been divided at all. So that is how there is a real swing depending on which judge and the approach that that they adopt to these circumstances.
Thank you, Meta. It seems that we all have the same problem. It's universal. It depends on the judge. You get the resources that you will have on the case.
Please
let me now introduce you my real mentor, someone that I really admire and love a lot, a very good friend. I have to say that he's the first Latin American lawyer accepted in the International Academy of Family Lawyer. He's a very well-renowned lawyer in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He also wrote a book that I can see on the back that speaks precisely about this subject, what happened before we married, during the marriage, and after the marriage. So, Paulo, please explain to us how it works in Brazil.
Good afternoon, everybody. I would like to, first of all, make my congratulations to Daniela and Carolina about this wonderful organization of this meeting. I'm very proud to be. Look, I'm very proud to say that I'm very happy, truly, to speak to my family, the family of family lawyers. I'm very pleased. I'd like to introduce, and to start saying that the concepting of family law, like the most human of all rights. Before the marriage formalization in Brazilian legal system, open space for the aspect of negotiation, the combination of two affections, negociales and maritales. Very interesting, this point. Before the marriage, we touch about money, about the material things. We have to prepare the future govern of the marriage. And we have the point of marriage, and we discuss the aspect of affection, love, attraction, everything else. A general rule, marriage and informal common law, de facto union, will be governed by the regime of partial ownership of property. And we have also in Brazil the universal community of property, separate ownership of property, and final participation in acquisition or community of equities. Less the legal regime of partial ownership of property, the other must be created by the couple and written the deed facing a notary public. Number one in the regimes in Brazil, partial ownership property. It's the patrimonial legal established by law. According to the rules, the assets acquired before the marriage will not be considered joint property, establishing thus the separation of past assets and the community of future assets. Before 1977, the year of divorce law, the property legal, the legal property regime in Brazil was that the universal community of property. After the individual assets are classified in this kind of regime, partial ownership in incommunicable or communicable. It is possible to affirm that the former are those that constitute the private patrimony of one of the spouses, while the latter constitute the social common assets. Also are also incommunicable assets, those acquired before the celebration of the marriage, but all assets acquired free of charge by donation or inheritance, and those that may have been surrogate in their place. But the acquisition coming from dividends, stock profits, rental of real estates are communicate, including those coming from assets acquired before the marriage. This point is very interesting in this kind of region. Number two, the universal community of property. Contrary to the restricted and partial community, in the universal community of property regime, need to be built by a written prenup. There is a complete and full communication of the assets, regardless of whether when are present or the future, with communication even of debts and obligations. However, by expressal legal provision, some assets and debts are also excluded from the community in accordance, such as donate or inherited property with an incommunicability clause and those surrogate in their place. Number three, separate ownership of property. This prematrimonial regime is very usual among us in Brazil. The separate ownership of property is often the option of the medium and high level social classes of the fiancés. The volition, the will of the groom must be expressed facing the written deed built by a public notary. In this regime, each spouse retains exclusively ownership of his or her property, as well as remains in the integral administration of the same, and can freely dispose of it regarding either real estate property or chattel. The legal or mandatory separation of property does not depend on a prenuptial agreement since established by law. It means that inside the regime of separation of assets, we have also the mandatory separation when the law make an intervention in the will of the parties. The regime will be the mandatory in the marriage of people who contract it with no observance of the suspensive clause of the celebration of the wedding of a person over 70 years of age, and all those who depend to marry on a judicial supply. It must be said that both spouses are obliged to contribute toward the expenses of the couple in proportion to the income from their work and their patrimony, unless otherwise provided the prenuptial agreement. It's important to note, however, that despite the norm contained in the Civil Code, Jurisprudence 377 of the Supreme Federal Court established that in the legal separation of assets, assets acquired during the marriage are communicable. That is, the assets that were acquired during the marriage and or the common law marriage in the de facto family will be considered common to the couple, must be shared. Finally, in the conventional separation of property, each spouse will also continue to be exclusively owner of his or her assets and will maintain the integral administration of them. In the sense, because they do not differ greatly, we can say that the gap between the two regimes inside the same regime, if we can say, if the fact that legal separation is derived from a legal requirement, when the conventional one is one results from the mere liberality of spouse's volition or will. Finally, the fourth one is final participation in acquisition or community of acquest. The regime is defined as mixed through the marriage. All the rules of total separation apply, and after its dissolution, those of restrict or partial community are valid. Born from the convention, it depends, therefore, of a prenuptial agreement. It's very important to say that this property regime is very rare. Its implementation is very difficult, and it in case of divorce of the party is practical inapplicable. Since my practice in family law starting 1961, I didn't assist any file involving this marriage. In both codes, it means issued in 1916 and the recent from 2002 will have similar regime. But in practice, this kind of regime, we must be assisted by an auditor since the bill of the prenup before the marriage. And of course, if the divorce comes, we shall need to call again assistance of specialists. I'd like to finish my speech pushing up the problem of the share of the assets. I will answer, is it easy to share formally the assets in divorce in Brazil? We can use there, you can hear for instance, the public notary or the family just. But you're not obliged to make the share of after in this moment of divorce. You can make after. You can delay a little bit and make when you want the division, the share of the assets. Another question, how about the tax in Brazil? We have a difference between the assets divided in Rio de Janeiro. For instance, we have an incident of 80% inside this difference. If no difference, no tax. It means that if you make an equally division, no tax. If you have a difference, inside the difference, you must pay 80%. And finally, I like to make question with Brazil, UK, and US. The prenup in my country, it means two or three written sheets of paper. Two or three written sheets of paper. And US and UK looks like a thick dictionary. with more than 30 or 40 pages. I can make a legal opinion easy in our prenup, but it's too heavy to study, take too much time for us to prepare legal opinion in US and UK prenups. I would like to finish saying to everybody that we have must to stimulate among us this kind of meetings, because we are changing ideas, knowledge. We are developing our know-how for practice with our clients, and also an integration among our family of family lawyers. Thank you very much again.
Thank you, dear Paulo. As always, a great speech and very touching words that I know that you did with me, you will do with a lot of our colleagues to be stimulated about keep on studying and sharing international family matters. So a very, very quick question and answer to just to finish this panel. What about if I need to enforce a foreign order in your jurisdiction? And what about if I need to look for some assets that are placed in your jurisdiction and I have an order from a foreign court? In a very, very fast way, Margaret, how should I do that?
I think you would have to do it from your end because you wouldn't be able to enforce an order in Barbados. What we have done when we're seeking to enforce an order overseas is to force the party to give their consent to that foreign corporation or entity disclosing the information. You can register separation agreements or cohabitation agreements in Barbados, but that's something different. It means registering it here and enforcing it here. But if you're speaking just about discovery, I would say that the best way to deal with that is where you are and force the person to give the consent to the entity overseas to provide that information. So we've done that. If we want something in another jurisdiction, we get an order that the person give their consent to the disclosure.
Thank you very much, Margaret. You don't know how hard will be to do that in a civil code system for someone to agree on that. Alberto, what about Mexico?
Yeah, of course it's possible. We recognize the foreign judgments, and you should send an international letter, a regulatory letter, and the Mexican courts should just review that the service process has been made properly, and that there is no violation to the public order in Mexico. That's the main stuff. It will take some time because we can appeal not the main issue of the judgment. That's forbidden, but there's always some remedies that you can file. You can appeal and stop the ruling of the when it was recognized the international judgment. And it will take some time. As you know, there's nothing very fast or quickly here in Mexico. And in our system, we have a lot of protection, human rights protections, that can take maybe 2 or 3 years to execute some kind of awards or judgments.
Thank you, Alberto. We South Americans or a Latin American, we take time sometimes to do some. Meta, what about Bahamas? A lot of times we are looking for trust in Bahamas for the other party.
So if we're looking to enforce a judgment, we've got the Reciprocal Enforcement of Judgments Act. So if the judgment was one that Marguerite had obtained for her client in Barbados, we would be able to register it here under the Reciprocal Enforcement of Judgments Act. But the countries that we have That reciprocal enforcement act agreement with are quite limited. There really are more of the Caribbean islands and then, of course, United Kingdom. But if we don't have any agreement with the countries, then it would be under the common law and they'd actually have to file a petition for the judgment to be recognised. And the judgment would have to be final and conclusive for a fixed amount of money, not contrary to public policy, no breach of natural justice, meaning that the person would have had to been served in the other jurisdiction and so forth. That court should have had jurisdiction to actually make that judgment. So basically, those are the key criteria. As for getting discovery, I last year did a Norwich Pharmacal Order application here in aid of a Brazilian wife who was desperately fighting to recover assets from her husband who'd hidden everything in a company and a conglomeration of companies. And I actually was representing the registered office of the company. And she was successful subject to limitations on what she could use the information for. So our jurisdiction will facilitate discovery. Interestingly, from other countries, but we have some difficulties here, limitations on getting it here, unfortunately, for various reasons. Yes.
Thank you very much, Meta. I know that is a whole issue there in Bahamas, so I appreciate your explanation. Paulo, what about if I need to enforce an order in Brazil? I'm looking for assets there in Brazil. Or are you going to respect the patrimonial regimes that was celebrated abroad? What about this, Paulo? You have to unmute yourself. You're mute. Paulo?
Okay. Look, in Brazil, first of all, let's say that the family law is changing hourly, daily, monthly, and the justice power and the legislative power have a conflict because the legislative takes 1, 2, 3, 4 years to issue a new law. So in this meantime, the Supreme Court, that's member of judicial power, is issuing some jurisprudence to put in law. So in this moment, all the order comes to Brazil to put in practice must go to Supreme Court, and there they decide if it is correct or incorrect, is the conflict with our legal system. The Supreme Court says no, but if you have some condition of harmonize, the Supreme Court says yes. I have tried a lot of time to cry in other Congress saying that we must to finish, we must to destroy the effects of bureaucracy in the family law. Today, look, we are discussing in all the world about the top, about the problems involving family law. Why you cannot use a judge can send immediately an order to another judge in another country and say, is it the interest of the minor? Have the interest of the wife or the husband? Please put in practice. Because this problem that I told some minutes ago, the process in Supreme Court takes a long time, not immediately. This point is very dangerous for the security of the family. That's it.
Thank you, Paulo. You are right. In a globalization society as ours, we should do better. We should be able to make enforcement in an easier way for everybody, knowing that people is traveling, relocating, etc., and having assets all around the world. I have no words to thank you enough. Thank you so much. It was an absolutely pleasure for me to be able to moderate your panel.